From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made just 30 minutes ago when Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that based on infection rates, all schools in New York State can reopen this fall. He said, quote, "We are probably in the best situation in the country right now. If anybody can open schools, we can open schools," end quote. On September 14th, the first group of students will return to their classrooms at Greece Central School District. Districts were given 10 business days to develop their plans, and after hearing from thousands of students and staff, Greece Central's leadership selected a hybrid model for reopening. Under that plan, most students will be in classrooms 2 days a week and learn from home 3 days a week. Students will be divided into different groups that will alternate days in the building. Students also have the option to learn from home 100% of the time. Parents can choose that. In a message to parents, Superintendent Kathleen Groutman acknowledged that she knows many parents are nervous about this. Some are scared or even overwhelmed. She said, quote, "I need you to know and trust that the health and safety of our students and staff is my top priority," end quote. She joins us this hour to share not only Greece's plan for reopening, but to talk about the protocols that districts across Monroe County and even Western New York are looking at here. And now that we know, it can happen. Let's welcome Superintendent Groutman. Superintendent, welcome to the program. Thanks for making the time.
Hi, Evan. Thanks so much for having me.
And by the way, I know you are the superintendent of Greece Schools. Listeners need to know that you're also head of the Monroe County Association of Superintendents. And we've got a lot to talk about. I want to do two things to start. I want to start by telling you that I'm going to try to model with you in this conversation the kind of thing that we've been asking listeners to do, which is to show patience and empathy. I mean, I think everybody wants what's best for kids. I'm a parent myself. These are some of the hardest calls I've ever had to make as a parent. I cannot imagine what it must be like for you. And I want to just thank you for the work that you're doing sincerely as a parent and as a member of this community, because I know that everyone wants what's best. So let me start by saying that.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And now let me also, for listeners, recap what the governor said so we know specifically where the governor is coming from on this. So I'm just going to go down this rundown of list of news the governor made in the last half hour. First of all, once again, based on the metrics, all school districts in the state can reopen. And again, his quote is, "This is just great news. If anybody can open schools, we can open schools." He stressed that's true for every region in the state. Some listeners might have heard rumors that the state was going to delay it by a month or a week or whatever. There's no indication of that. In fact, the governor's pretty much making it clear that the districts locally can make those decisions. So if districts want to move it back a week or whatever, that will be up to them. Now, here's the part that I just had a hard time believing. There's 749 school districts in New York State. The governor says 127 school districts failed to submit any reopening plans at all, and another 50 districts sent incomplete reopening plans. They are not allowed to reopen until they send in those plans to the State Department of Health. So roughly a quarter of New York school districts didn't submit the plans. I just have a hard time believing that. I don't know that that's true for any Superintendent Groutman, I don't know if any that's true for any in Monroe County. Do you?
I can assure you it's not for anybody in Monroe County. Absolutely not. I mean, all of our plans are in.
Okay. The governor says that reopening schools is largely up to local districts as long as they're within the guidelines. And he said he thinks it's going to be more complicated than even many people think because primarily of the concerns of parents and teachers. And he says local districts will have to figure out how to handle that. The governor's quote is, "I have been deluged with calls from parents and teachers. There is a significant level of anxiety. And if the teachers don't come back, then you're not reopening the schools." Well, an NPR survey this month found 2/3 of American teachers have significant anxiety about going back and working in the classroom. That's from Governor Andrew Cuomo. So districts, up to districts, we're in really good position with infection rates for the moment. Superintendent Groutman, I assume that that's what you were expecting from the governor today?
I was hoping. I've stopped really expecting because there are sometimes there are surprises on these calls. So I was hoping so. And just given he's been really clear in terms of the thresholds for opening, and I knew where we were, that it was my hope that this would be the answer we'd get today.
Yeah.
So I'm happy about that.
This news comes within 24 hours of some of the first photos, and I'm sure you've seen them, from Georgia, which is open earlier. Mm-hmm. They're open this week. And photo that went viral, New York Times, I mean, everybody carried it. It's a hallway in a high school.
Yeah.
almost no one is wearing a mask, and there are dozens of kids packed together. And it's the first image of reopening schools, and it made a lot of people even more nervous. Did you see that image and think, well, that's what we can't do, or did you think that's just what life is going to be? I mean, what goes through your mind when you see that?
Oh, no, I shuddered when I saw that. I mean, that's exactly the kind of detail and work that we're doing as districts around process and procedures, and really thinking about the details around how kids are going to move through hallways so that we can ensure social distancing, or so that we can reduce numbers of kids in hallways, and all those specifics. So I looked at that and thought, we can't have that. Absolutely not.
The governor mentioned that he wants reopening plans posted online. He wants remote learning options for parents who are going to go that route posted online. He wants testing and contact tracing information posted. And for the big five districts, including Rochester, he wants sessions with parents to answer questions, multiple sessions before the opening of school to answer questions. Superintendent Groutman, I saw you did an online session recently. I mean, I'm sure you've done a lot already fielding questions, and I know that you will do more here, but I'm a parent, so I'm just going to lob a few at you to start here.
Sure.
Is it true in your district, the district that my son's in, which is a Monroe County district, parents have until August 10th to decide if they're going to go with the remote option or an in-person option? Is that true for most districts that you're hearing? I mean, are you giving parents, you know, a certain deadline to decide on that?
We'd ask people for a deadline, and the reason for that is just for a planning purpose.
Sure. Oh, yeah,
in terms
sure.
of us being able to identify how many kids we're going to have in the buildings and how to set up and roster kids. But if a parent chooses at any point to choose to go remote, they can do that.
Okay.
So even though we gave a deadline, we were really specific around, please let us know by this date. If someone decides on August 21st that they want to go remote, they can go remote.
Yeah,
so that option does exist.
Yeah, and I certainly assume as we go throughout the school year, you know, if there is not a regression in infection rates and a region-wide shutdown, you're going to have parents who decide, you know, we've been doing the remote thing, but we're going to move the student back to the in-class setting, or maybe vice versa. We've been doing the in-class setting, we're getting nervous, we're going to go all remote. I mean, I certainly understand that. What I don't know is this. If you had a parent say, hey, I've got two kids in the Greece district, and it's complicated schedules, but we're nervous about a lot of things. We'd like to make our own hybrid plan. We'd like to have the kids in school for 1 week, but then home for a week, can they make their own plans, or do they got to pick one or the other?
They've got to pick. I mean, that gets to, there's a lot related to that in terms of continuity of plans, but also from a safety perspective of kids and knowing when they're going to be in a place, transporting them. So we can't do the on and off thing week by week with families. It's just too much in terms of disruption for staff to know and plan for, and from a safety perspective for us to plan for.
Yeah, and I know you can't speak for every other district, but I know you work with a lot of other superintendents. I do assume that's true in most districts, that parents will have to make a decision. Yeah, yeah.
We've had that conversation. We talk a lot together as a group, and we can't be exactly the same, but there's a lot of principles around that just make sense from like a safety and planning perspective that we've all pretty, I don't know that, I mean, I can't say I've seen it in every plan, but by and large, I know we all agreed on that idea that you can't just kind of decide week to week.
Yep. How many teachers work in the Greece Central School District?
We have about 1,100 teachers here in Greece.
And yesterday we talked to essentially workers in school districts who are not teachers. I mean, bus drivers, and janitorial, mm-hmm. custodial staff, and so many others, secretaries. So there's a lot of people who work, a lot of adults who work in these buildings. And the governor stressing today, if they don't want to come back, then schools aren't going to reopen. What are you hearing from 1,100 teachers and other employees about their anxiety levels and whether they are willing to come back to work?
Yeah. So we did some initial survey data with our staff. I'm trying to think of exactly when that was. It was early in July. And particularly for teachers, we had just a general sort of scale in terms of how comfortable were they with coming back. And so I can just share with you some basic data. And this was early, before we'd gotten really detailed with some of our plans. But we had about 70 teachers say that they did not plan to return. And then we had about over 200 who said that they were pretty uncomfortable for some reason and may have identified maybe a health condition or some reason. Maybe it was because of childcare, or maybe it was because of they're caring for an elderly adult. There was all different reasons, but it was interesting because it gave us at that point our first view. So if you're talking about 1,100 teachers, and you're looking at almost 300 that you have concerns about, that was one of the first real sort of sleepless nights in terms of thinking about how do you start school and how do we predict and really know who's going to show up. So no matter what model we're choosing, are we going to have the people to actually do this? Take that was teachers, and then then you think about our bus drivers. So we have almost 500 bus drivers, and the average age of those drivers, many of them are over 60, so and have other, you know, comorbid conditions and things like that. So that's another area that we have concerns. We already have a shortage. So just the idea from a very basic level in terms of can we get kids to school, and are we going to have people there to actually take care of them and teach? So, yeah, it's a huge concern. We've continued to get more information and provide more information to our staff around our plans, but also just if they're going to consider something like that because of a health condition and so on, how to help them through that process so that we know sooner than later.
So to make sure, I've got 1,100 teachers, 70 told you they're not coming back, 200 more said they're concerned, and, you know, sounds like they're kind of on the fence?
That they were uncomfortable, for one. And then what we tried to do is within the survey, it brought them to some additional questions so that we could find out. We were trying to find out what's at the root of it. Was it because they were so concerned about trying to find childcare for themselves? Was it because they care, they have maybe a parent that lives with them that they're concerned about? Or maybe it was their own health. So we were trying to, at that point, it was an early survey, just get a sense of like what's going on with our people so that we can plan better and be more thoughtful.
Okay. What happens if, you know, those 70 who are not going to come back, they're not going to come back. What happened? What's the sort of the threshold for not being able to do this? How many teachers do you need to know that you can do this?
Yeah, that's all stuff. I mean, that is all part of the nitty-gritty planning that we're doing right now. You know, I've continued to say to people, what we handed into the state last week was a very high-level, broad document. It provided assurances around things that we said we can do in our schools, but the actual making a plan, a really specific plan that's going to work for our school districts, is much, much more detailed work that's going to take us time. So, you know, rostering classes and figuring out, for example, how many kids are in that opt-out category. Is it going to reduce the number of teachers I need if I have people opting out to do remote? I mean, there's a number of things that this all falls and sort of overlaps with, and that's the work that we're doing right now. So I don't have a distinct number right now. I can tell you, we have, from an opt-out perspective, I think we're almost to about 11% of our kids who are opting out, which is lower than we had initially thought. I would anticipate we'll still get some more as we continue on. But then that's that real-time data. So those are kids that now we're taking out of classrooms and we're configuring and rostering teachers with students right now to figure out, you know, how many is our exact number.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we're also thinking, and then the other part of that is we're really working and planning for contingency plans. So if for some reason, because the other piece about it is it's not only what you start with, it's the idea that we are anticipating illness being up. So we're anticipating that when we're asking teachers to attest every day to their health and wellness, and they have a sore throat, you know, normally many teachers and many people come to work with a symptom. And so if we expect that in the fall, once they start back, you have one symptom, we're asking you to stay home, our absentee rate is going to go up. So then you're looking at sort of how do you build plans around having a stronger subpool, which we don't have huge substitute pools in Monroe County. We're graduating less and less students out of our universities in teaching fields, which has reduced that having a bigger impact? And then now we need more. Many of our substitutes are retired. Are they going to come back? And then are we going to have people to even cover when teachers are sick? So the reason I mention that, and I guess it sounds convoluted, but it shows the complexity of every one of the decisions we're making. And every single part of this leads to 10 other questions and complex issues.
What is for the students? Let's kind of break this down. I guess let's do it this way. Why don't you just briefly kind of break down, because a lot of districts are doing, you know, K through five, maybe 3 or 4 days a week, and high school might be, you know, two to start. I mean, they're kind of varied up. Greece is doing it how?
So Greece and many others, actually the majority of us, if you look at the numbers, are in a K-12 hybrid. So what that looks like is kids are divided into several different groups. So some kids will come on Mondays and Thursdays. Some kids will come on Tuesdays and Fridays. Some kids, like our highest need students, like special education students and our English language learners, will come 4 days a week. So they'll come Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday, Friday. And then you're also going to have another group that's fully remote. So you really have multiple different groupings and options within there. So those kids, like I said, will come half the week. Wednesday will be allocated. There'll be some additional cleaning that goes on Wednesday, but we will have, in Greece, we will have all of our staff on site. And there'll be really specific professional development and work, because one of the things that we heard really loud and clear in the spring with the way that remote was done then was that it wasn't working. Our teachers weren't all trained to be remote teachers. They didn't know necessarily how to function in that way. So what Wednesday for us can be is our way of making sure that our teachers are really well equipped, that we're communicating really clearly with families, that we're overlapping so that we're not, if you're the parent, you're not getting, three Zoom invitations at the same time. Just how do we make sure that we're better in terms of coordination and from a pedagogy perspective, doing online instruction in a better, more effective way for our kids?
Okay.
And so again, that Wednesday will be a lot of that.
Sure. And again, for your interaction with parents, what is the percentage of, what is the, maybe the low and the high end range that you expect parents to opt their kids out and go full remote?
I think we'll be below 15% when it's all said and done. And I think, to your point, what you said earlier, I think we'll have some who migrate back in once they sort of see how things go at the beginning of the school year. But I think we have some people who just conservatively, you know, they're not sure, they're going to kind of hold back and see.
So you think?
But I don't think our number.
Maybe 85%. Maybe 85% of families are going to say, Our child will be in the building when permitted.
Yes. Okay. There's a lot of parents who want their kids back full time. I think that's the data point that we've gotten is over 60% of our families have said they would be comfortable with them being back full time. I would love to have them back if I could provide the assurances and meet the requirements in terms of social distancing and some of those things. I'd love to have more back. I just can't do that in a safe way that really gives the assurances to the state that I need to.
From talking to your colleagues in other districts, do you get the sense that, you know, 80 to 90% range of kids will be in the building when permitted this fall?
I think so. It's interesting. When we've compared notes, and I don't want to speak for anybody because I don't know, and some people are just getting some of that data right now in terms of having their opt-outs. For the people who are going to go full remote, they still have a deadline. Maybe that's pending. But I don't think the number is going to be particularly high in most of our places. I think when we were talking, we all were hovering at least like last week in the 10 to 15 range.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Kathleen Grotman, the superintendent of Greece Central School District and the head of the Monroe County Association of Superintendents. And listeners, if you've got questions or comments, obviously, Superintendent Grotman can talk about Greece's decision, but also can talk about what she's hearing from colleagues and doing the work across Monroe County. So can't speak necessarily for other individual districts, but really a great sense of the kinds of conversations and decisions that have to be made. Governor Cuomo announced about an hour ago that, yes, New York State is greenlighting schools to reopen in the fall, that our infection rates are certainly low enough, And then in the governor's words, if anybody can open schools this fall, we can open schools this fall. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. How about outdoor classes? Is there a way to put students outside under a big tree for a while during the day in the fall?
Absolutely. You know, we've already talked about that in terms of, you know, some classes that require even more space, music, PE, like making sure that we do use outdoors. And for any class, really, being able to use outside is a 100% great option.
I don't mean to sort of be skeptical, but it's one thing to say, yeah, that's great if we can do it. But I mean, is there an actual plan to divide this space is Miss D's class, this space is Mr. A's class, and you know, or anything like that going on?
No, okay. No. So I would say, I mean, the other piece that we have, unless you're thinking, and again, one of the things that I know has been talked about across New York State is the idea of tents and other sort of structures that could possibly be used in a more reliable way. We have weather. I mean, in Rochester, that's pretty difficult to plan for, particularly in the fall. So while we're going to utilize the outside as much as possible because it's also good and healthy to be outside, we're not planning for spaces necessarily to be allocated or identified like that. That could be other districts' plans, not mine.
Okay. We'll talk testing in just a moment, but briefly, sports, arts, extracurriculars, not happening?
So right now we're a no on sports. I mean, that honestly, we're waiting to hear more about that. And I know they were actually on the governor's call, I think, starting to talk about some of that. Extracurriculars, I think it depends. And there's not a perfect answer because, you know, we looked at our list of extracurriculars and there's some of the things that we offer for kids after school that could be done in a safe way with social distancing. There are some things that just innately probably could never be done in a way that was safe. So what we're doing is we're really going line by line through everything that we offer with the idea that for our kids, social or extracurricular activities are oftentimes a huge benefit for them socially and emotionally and connect them to school. So we don't want to like take everything away. And we're trying to figure out, are there different ways of doing this? And could it be structured differently? And if so, we want to try to provide that. We may start out the year, and one of the things that we talked about in Greece, and this may vary from district to district, is just start off at least the very beginning of the year without anything, just because I think we're nervous about just, can we get this right? We've got a whole new model of school that we're trying to implement with like so many different rules and regulations. So just being able to take the month of September and maybe the beginning of October to just say, we're just going to do school with the idea of phasing in more activities as we go.
Okay.
And then hopefully we'll have more information about sports.
Well, so this past March when school shut down, there was an emergency sort of level of thinking. And by that, I mean a lot of schools and a lot of teachers were telling parents, don't be too hard on your kids. We're going to try to figure this out as best we can. You know, maybe that paper doesn't get handed in, or maybe, you know, this test, don't put so much pressure on. I can say now, because, my son's not going to be in her class anymore, so Christina Dierkel was just a godsend for students like my son, teachers like her, loving, available, but also reassuring parents. We can meet, we can Zoom, whatever you need. But she basically said, we're going to try to keep up with the assignments. We're going to try to get them to do math and reading and writing. We're not necessarily going to grade it or grade it hard. I mean, it's just we got to get through the end of the school year and let's get as much done as we can, but let's be supportive. That was a really loving and hardworking in a crisis sort of mindset. I wonder if the fall is going to try to feel more like school, I guess, for a lack of a better term,
yeah.
Dr. Grotman. I mean, is this case where, you know, tests are going to count, papers are going to count, you're going to try to get on that schedule of academics the way that you normally would?
Yeah. This has been a really explicit conversation, I think, that all of us as superintendents have been having in our own districts. What we found, just like you experienced in the spring, was a great deal of kindness and grace, as it should have been. And I think that was not only for kids who may have been struggling with this new environment and how to navigate it. There was tech issues that were occurring that were really creating problems for kids. There was a ton of issues in terms of even teacher training and their ability to know how to use certain platforms and follow up in certain ways. So I feel like that was appropriate, but I also feel like as much as it was kind, we also had kids who really disengaged and really did very little to nothing. So what we're trying to do is sort of marry the two in that, like as we go forward, how do we increase expectations? How do we make sure that there's accountability for kids and accountability for learning? That's our job. But also, we're still going to need to be patient because when kids are home for 2 days a week, you know, my daughter was taking a class online this spring. I was saying she was right in the middle of a test. Our Wi-Fi went down. She got kicked off and was panicked because she was so worried about like that, what was going to happen with that test. I would still expect us having a great deal of patience and grace with kids and families, but I also know that we've also been very, very intentional and deliberate about how do we build more accountability. We do have to move back to grading of some sort. And so like, what is that going to look like? We're working with, we have an instructional subcommittee who has been working and is going to continue to work right now through the beginning of the year and in with teachers around what is that going to look like. But yes, I think that's going to be a feel that's different. And then the other piece to that that's nice is if I'm a teacher and I have my kids in school 2 days a week, I also have like my eyes on them. There's a lot around that relationship with a teacher in person around sort of rooting for a kid and helping them and supporting them so that when they're on their own, they're doing more and keeping up with their work, their studies and all of that. So I anticipate that changing and being much different this fall. And you can see that in a lot of the plans that people have started to put off or put out, they have this chart which shows like this idea of like no grades. And then in the chart for the fall, it shows grading, sort of moving to a more traditional mindset, I guess.
When students are back in the buildings in Greece, who has to wear masks and when?
So we've been really clear about this as a district. This was one of the sort of our first things that we wanted to be clear about. And this was a little bit of a struggle when all the guidance documents came out because there was a little bit in conflict or the way that everything read and the way parents were interpreting things and different, I guess, stakeholders. The way we're going to do this is I'm going to just pretend to be a student. A student will need to wear a mask on the bus the entire time. When they get off the bus, they'll be wearing a mask the entire time. So through any common area, whether that be a hallway, whether that be the cafeteria, an office space, and so on. Anytime they're out and about through the school, they will need to wear a mask. They'll also be wearing their masks in their classrooms. However, what I've said to people is it's really clear in the guidance that we do need to provide masking breaks for students. So when students, for example, might be in their instructional space when they're socially distanced, that might be when a teacher decides to give them a mask break where they're working on reading a book or they're working on an assignment. They might take their masks down for that activity and so on. That's considered a mask break. It gives them a little bit of a break in general from having that on their face. But when they're up and about in the classroom, if they're getting up to go to the bathroom or getting up to go someplace, the mask comes back on. So, and teachers will be wearing them too. So that masking idea really, I feel like that's exactly the way Governor Cuomo described it today, or I think it was one of his people that was describing that. It's exactly the way, you know, as we've talked to Dr. Mendoza and the Department of Health, the masking piece is huge in that it's the one thing that we know that really, really works. So we want to make sure kids have them on as much as possible, but we also want to make sure that they do get breaks periodically throughout the day.
I think kids have adapted to it amazingly well.
I agree. So my 5-year-old niece like isn't even fazed.
Yeah, it's really remarkable. And I'm not saying, you know, they don't, they masks never get annoying, and it's going to be a grind at times. And so I understand the idea of breaks, but I think maybe we've underestimated kids in this regard, and I think they can really do it. But having said that, have you had parents contact the district saying, my kids will not wear masks, or we don't wear them in this household, or you can't do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we've had this conversation over and over again around sort of this whole issue being pretty polarizing. And around all different parts of it. So the masking is one area where some people have said, my child will not be wearing a mask. So we've started to have that conversation around sort of this idea of masking exemption, what would constitute an exemption? So, and there is some language in the guidance around a medical exemption. So there are some students who were probably going to get some medical documentation saying, you know, Jimmy or whoever has a medical exemption, they don't need to wear a mask. So I'm anticipating that just because it says it clearly in the guidance that that can happen, and I'm assuming that there's probably some conditions that might lead to that. In those cases, so what we're doing right now, because I don't know who those kids are going to be at this point, and this gets to, again, my other point around the complexity and the significant, like everything is a big issue. So with that, what would we do? Our principals have been working this entire week around our plans, sort of like this idea that here are the high level assurances, what's it going to look like in your school? Recognizing that there's going to be some kids who have mask exemptions, how will we accommodate for them? So obviously, that picture from Atlanta with all the kids in the passing time, I don't want kids in the same passing time. So if it's a student who is not wearing a mask, they shouldn't necessarily be in the hallway with everybody else with their masks. I just don't think that's fair. We're talking about a safety issue. So this idea that how are we making sure that we've identified the kids who've got those exemptions and then create accommodations? Maybe they leave a few minutes early so that they get to their location a little bit quicker. Maybe there's a spot on the bus where we can provide social distancing so that everybody else will be wearing their masks. And maybe there's an area, if I have an exemption, where I need to be. Those are some of the details that we're thinking through and trying to figure out so that we're ready for that. And then outside of that, we're probably going to have, that's a medical piece. I'm guessing that you're going to have some issues related to just noncompliance. Go to any high school.
That's what I mean.
Try to enforce a dress code. You're going to have noncompliance.
So what's the noncompliance plan on masking?
Yeah, we're stuck here. I mean, this is. I would love to say I have an easy answer to that, and there may be people who come out and say, "Well, I'm suspending kids, or I'm doing this." I'm not interested in coming out with, "We're going to suspend all kids who are being noncompliant." You know, because I mean, imagine if we did that in a high school. Probably the next thing that would happen is everybody would have their mask. I mean, the idea of trying to get out of something. I mean, we're thinking about it in a much more sort of teaching, restorative way around sort of what's going on. Why aren't you wearing it? Let's talk. I mean, really kind of looking at that in a one-on-one way and working towards getting the students to all be compliant with it. I'm not sure what to expect with that. I mean, I think it's funny because that question has consumed so many conversations this week with our administrators and has them worried about what's it going to look like, how are we going to manage it, what are we going to do? And I think that's part of, for us, being able to plan and really talk about this for a month. I feel like we're going to come to a better place around what will be our approach for that, how can we do that in a consistent way. And might there need to be discipline? There may need to be discipline. I don't want to say that there is not, but I also, I don't want to make it seem like it's this easy answer that a kid takes their mask down during the day and they get suspended and sent home from school, because that's a nightmare too.
Listeners, if you've got questions or comments, we're going to get them after our only break of the hour here. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. Kathy Groutman is the superintendent of Grease Schools. She's the head of the Monroe County Association of Superintendents. She's our guest for the hour, generous with her time on the day that Governor Cuomo says yes. Schools officially can reopen. as long as they've got those plans submitted and they have posted and communicated them to their communities. So thousands of kids are going to go back to school in just a few weeks. And we're talking about what that means on the other side of this break. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about whether we have missed a big opportunity this summer. There was a lot of talk back in May about shutting down entire city streets to car traffic, letting businesses spread out, people walk and enjoy the air and find more space. Pandemic friendly, but also maybe a different idea about how to structure cities. But mostly we haven't done that. Why not? Let's talk about it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Andrea says, I've got a 7th and 4th grader. Are they going to have the nasal test before they go back to class? Superintendent Groutman. I don't know where Andrea's kids go to school.
That's a great question. And I think some of the comments more recently have led to some confusion around testing. So no, it's not my understanding at this point that all of our kids will need to be tested before they start school. And what the governor really talked about today was the idea that districts and schools need to have a plan for testing. And I guess what I would want to really clarify from Monroe County here with our Monroe County Department of Health, we don't, like as a school or school district, do testing. So our plan for that is, for example, if a student, all of our students can just start school. There doesn't need to be a proven test or negative. But when we start school, if a student is symptomatic, we have really clear protocols that are in our plans related to the student goes to the nurse. They're put in, there's an isolation space where we know that the student can be alone or I guess not contaminate anybody else. Student gets picked up. And then our plan in terms of testing is that we work directly with pediatrician, the Department of Health around our agencies to make sure that student gets tested. And then the Department of Health essentially is contacted immediately. So they're the ones who actually take over with the contact tracing, all the other details related to that in terms of who else might need testing, what they're recommending in terms of who quarantined, like basically who else has been exposed or at risk in any way. And then from there, so they basically have taken the ball. That's not us as a school district. I've said over and over again, you know, as educators and administrators, we went to school to be teachers and administrators. We've got social studies degrees. We've got English degrees, elementary degrees. I am not a medical expert. I don't have any interest in being an infectious disease expert. I really leave that to the Department of Health to be our guide and our partner with that. And they've been wonderful partners so far. So in Monroe County, I feel like that works really well. And apparently that looks different in different parts of the state. But here, that's the way we're going to be working at.
Okay. So we're talking kids, but we're also talking teachers and staff, right? No required testing for them?
Nope. So the same thing would happen. Really, the same thing would happen with a teacher. If a teacher was symptomatic, we would do the same exact procedure. They would be isolated or go home. What we're doing when we do that with a student is we're talking to them about making sure that they contact their doctor. We're helping them with any of the steps that they need with that. We contact the Department of Health if the student tests positive, the Department of Health will probably be the one that contacts us, and then they lead all of the contact tracing pieces to that.
Okay. We are in a
and
state.
And the same thing would be true of a teacher.
Sure. We are in a state with free testing for all and no required symptoms to get tested. Are you encouraging staff to get tested with any regularity just because they can for free?
Yeah. No, I haven't. And, you know, I don't know. There's probably different opinions about that. You know, the worry initially, and I had a conversation, I had a parent call me after the statement that was made last week by Governor Cuomo. And her worry was around, are you going to do this to my kid? They were worried that we were going to be like swabbing kids at school, which I assured her that wouldn't happen. But the other piece to that is, we have over 100,000 kids in Monroe County. So if we made that as a mandate right now, I don't know what we would do to our facilities and agencies around in terms of like sort of jamming them up and lengthening the amount of time it's taking for people who are really sick to get their results. You know, I guess I just don't know that bigger impact. And I also wonder, so I might be negative today, 2 days later,
sure.
It could be a completely different story.
Yeah.
So I guess I don't look at us like the NFL or NBL or whatever around, like, we got to test every day. I feel like we're going to follow symptoms. I feel like if there's a student that's got particularly a fever and a cough, those pieces, we're going to be making sure that they get the testing that they need. And then we're going to be following the correct protocol in terms of really that contact tracing and what needs to happen beyond that as far as quarantining and any other decisions that need to be made.
Sure. And I take the point. I mean, certainly a negative test should not be viewed as sort of a blank check to do whatever you want. I mean, it is a limited set of information about past events, not current and future events. And I think that that's something that we all have to sort of train ourselves to get used to as we get, you know, tested with some regularity for different reasons. Let me read another email from a listener. Paul says, in West Irondequoit, K through 6 is going back 4 days a week. Wednesday is the midweek day off. I do not see how they will be able to distance kids without alternating days or how they will be able to disinfect the classrooms properly in such a short period of time. That's from Paul. Before I have Superintendent Groutman address some of those points, I will say this, just having read a lot of data and analysis about viral concerns on surfaces. It is not that we're not concerned about the virus on surfaces. It's that the transmissibility is a lot lower than the initial concerns back in March, April, maybe into May. So yes, we want to make sure surfaces are clean. Yes, you want to make sure that you are not touching your face or your eyes too often, or you're not really shaking hands, things like that. But the virus, you know, sitting somewhere in a vacant classroom over a weekend, you know, I don't think you need to nuke it with a spray. And there's a concern that the Atlantic Monthly recently wrote about called sanitation theater. It is this idea that we're distracted about sanitation when we need to be more concerned with the air and the aerosolization and the close contact in indoor settings. So that's just some of the analysis I've read from people far smarter than me who've been studying this stuff. So I'm not saying Paul's concern about disinfecting classrooms doesn't matter. But I do take his point there. I also take his point about the concern about kids being able to distance when they're in school 4 days a week. So let's start with the surfaces and disinfecting classrooms. Superintendent Groutman, go ahead.
All right, surfaces. I too have read far more than I ever wanted to about surfaces. And it is interesting. Like I said, the science with this, it's been a time in my life as an educator where I have joked around about the idea of never being wrong more in my life, where like I learned something and then within a week something has changed. So I think the idea of the surfaces is one area where we were really concerned early on and then have learned really around the science around that as far as being less of a concern. All of us, no matter where you are in the county or in the state, are working on sort of cleaning protocols. So what is that going to look like? We just, for example, hired 10 more. So when people talk about money, too, when they're talking about staffing and if you're bringing back less kids or doing this in a different way, aren't we going to save any money? Well, I can say right now we've just put in to hire 10 additional custodians, and I don't think that will be enough. Because some of the things that we're doing are throughout the day, we'll be wiping down high-touch surfaces. So our people will be prioritizing things like doorknobs, just high-touch surfaces throughout a school. You can imagine sort of all that exists. Then what you're going to have is you're going to have tables and chairs. You're going to have other common areas. A lot of that's going to need to be wiped down every night. We're going to need to make sure if it can't happen, if it's not something that's happening throughout the day, it's going to be done through each night so that the new set of kids coming in the next day will have a clean environment to work from. So I think that's pretty consistent. I think all of us have been confident that we're going to be able to do that every night in between stuff, and that the people, the workforce that we have on during the days is going to be prioritizing the high touch surfaces. So I don't know that there's a great answer to that, and I can't say like every doorknob, it's going to be every hour. Like, I don't know exactly how that's going to transfer or translate when we get kids in the building and we're all busy. But I know that will be our priority area. And I know that we're going to continue to add more support if needed to ensure that things are clean. I worry a lot about chemicals. I worry, and again, we're using safe things, but I also don't love the idea of, you know, some of these deep clean things that chemicals and things like that that people use, that happening all the time or in between. Like, we're not doing that on Wednesdays. We're doing a clean, but we're using really safe materials. And then if we have enough time to air out throughout the weekend, for example, we might be able to do more. But, you know, that's an actual protocol. Like, so I can talk a lot about that. But the reality of it is in each of our plans, we have really specific requirements. We have really specific materials we can use. There's a lot around that that's sort of guarded. It's up to us to then just figure out sort of the frequency. How's it going to look? Where are your kids going to be? Where will teachers be during this? All of that.
Okay. But what about Paul's concern about physical distancing of students in the buildings?
That's a great question. So physical distancing, so as an example, I was not able to bring all my kids back because of physical distancing. And that, unfortunately, I think, or I guess, really depends on your footprint. If you look at, so we in Greece, and I think depending on the district, we did a consolidation several years ago. So we sold off several buildings and consolidated schools, which made sense from a taxpayer perspective. It made sense from an efficiency perspective at the time. What it also did is positioned us in a challenging position because our space is tight. Our buildings are utilized at a really high percentage. So when you're talking about having to separate, I'm assuming what they're doing in Western Antiquate is, you know, a second grade classroom of 24 or 22 would be divided into two. So you got two things that you've got to consider with that. One is they need an additional space, which they might be making up that I'm sure they're using every little bit of space. They're probably using their gym space. They're using their music rooms. They're using any swing space that they may have in that building to create that space. But then the other piece that I struggled with on top of I didn't have the space was additional adults, because that really is another adult that is needed with that other group of students. So I struggled from a superintendent perspective on both ends because I didn't have the space. I might have been able to find it like here or there, but consistently when you're talking about 17 schools and 11 elementary buildings, I definitely couldn't do it. I'm assuming that they have. And again, we've been real clear. So we've worked with architects, and this is true for most of us as superintendents. We've worked with our facilities departments. We've worked with architects just to look at sort of a classroom square footage, where furniture is laid out, where shelving is, and then how do we make the most of that space. So in some cases, there's districts that have removed shelving to increase square footage in classrooms. They've reduced and removed certain furniture out of spaces so that they have more square footage. So my guess for West Rondequoit is they've done a lot of those things to then create those spaces, as well as a lot of the swing spaces that probably are being utilized now. And again, that just looks different depending on your footprint, your buildings, and so on. So I don't have a great answer to that other than that would be what I guess.
Let me try to squeeze in a couple more questions for the end of the hour here. There have been questions listeners have had about, you know, the air systems, and people hear about these sort of souped-up higher-end air ventilation systems. I don't know much about that. I'm sure they are expensive. I have no idea if there's even funding or money available for this. Are you concerned about air circulation and the ventilation systems?
So I'm not, and I don't want to say that I speak for everybody in that, but that was an early question that we had with our architects and facilities. And I think depending on your air handling system, the age of it, the efficiency, all of that, you will know if that's a concern or not. So I'm sure there may be a district or some across the state and nation who are replacing things and doing things, and it may be because of their existing system not being adequate. For us, I have confidence in what we have in terms of the ventilation and it being better than most places that you're at. You know, so actually, that was one of the things that our architect talked about, is just the idea, if I were to compare this to, you know, being at a restaurant in the mall or this, like, this is a superior system. So many of us have systems that are really adequate, will be fine in terms of ventilation, and we don't need any of that. I worry a lot about the time in terms of sort of people preying on the fact that, you know, just I guess people's concerns with an item that might be an expensive item just to make people feel better.
Sure,
There's a lot of it. I mean, I can't even tell you the amount of vendors who've reached out to me with all different products at this point. So we're being pretty cautious about that. And obviously we don't have a lot of money. So there's not a lot of, it's not like we got extra funding for this. As people talk about CARES, we're applying for CARES right now, but CARES was, we already had money removed from our budget back during budget season. So this is, there's no new money that we've received to help with any of these things. So when I'm talking about additional cleaners and when I'm talking about additional PPE and all of those things, that's a new expense that we're struggling with.
Yeah. Last 30 seconds or so, if a student has a positive test, they're out of school for 2 weeks, we assume, or more?
I think it would be minimum. I think that would depend in terms of what the Department of Health said. So the Department of Health would be the first people who were connected into that positive case. They would take over in terms of determining the length of time that the student needed to quarantine, as well as what exposure exists at the school level in terms of who else might need to quarantine or get tested and so on. So we'll really take the lead from them.
Superintendent Kathy Groutman from the Greece Central School District, I'm going to say it again. You've been generous with your time with us. I know you're working hard for the community. I hope we can have somewhat regular conversations. We're going to talk to some of your colleagues, superintendents, next week on this program. Good luck to you. Thank you very much for this time and for what you're doing in this community.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Kathy Groutman, doing a job that I think a lot of people probably wouldn't want, but just vital to make these decisions because the governor says today, yes, schools can reopen. Every district in this state can reopen as long as they've got their plans submitted and communicated to their communities. More connections coming up.